This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you again by the Friends of the Magic Word. Those are the people who financially support this podcast with donations and monthly pledges. For the cost of just a cup of coffee, you too can help support us as well. And you can also get some pretty cool perks along the way too. So thank you guys very much for tuning in each week and listening to these great conversations with conjurers. A couple of weeks ago, when we had episode number 571 featuring Jamie Salinas as the part-time pro, we had a contest started running that has been running now for 2 weeks, in which that we were going to be giving away not one, but two prizes for perfect personality readings by Paul Draper and Jamie Salinas. Well, that's something that is available for anyone in the whole world, since this is not going to be mailed. It is something that can be a download. And if you'll hang around to the end of this episode, we will announce who those two winners are. Well, this week we're actually going to be doing something that is a suggestion of one of the listeners, and that is they were curious to know how it is that you can win an award at FISM. Well, getting into other contests locally and nationally or regionally at certain levels, there are some certain rules not only for entering the contest, but then also as to what you need to accomplish in order to win the contest. And they're fairly straightforward and posted and presented on their website usually, or available upon request if you're looking to enter a contest. And unfortunately, it seems like that the higher you go and we finally get to the FISM, Fédération Internationale Société du Magie, something like that, I can't pronounce it very well, but FISM World Championships is something that is more of a mystery. And so the way that it's judged, and it is, there are a lot of international politics, I think, that are involved in all this, but is there? This week, we actually go into a lot of what makes a contest in FISM, how you get into the contest, how you advance, and what it is you need to accomplish along the way. Hopefully, this will demystify the FISM contest to some degree and will encourage you to enter contests then as well. We have three different people that we're going to go to this week from around the world to get their perspectives, because that they are very much involved in the contest and judging. And the first is Noel Britton, who is the current president of the Magic Circle in London, England. And I think it's first best to understand, before you go any further, whether or not this is for you. In other words, what are your goals? What should you be looking to accomplish? Why would you want to enter a contest? And so he's got some very valuable advice. He also talks about, of course, the contest that they hold there at the Magic Circle, and they have various contests and different prizes that are awarded each year. But the bottom line of what Noel has to say is just some really great advice and some soul searching that you should do before you enter this contest. Try to go forward in FISM, or any contest at all for that matter. Probably good application for any other contest you might endeavor, whether it's going to be a cooking contest or whatever else. Anyhow, I want to thank Noel very much in advance for sharing the advice that he gives here this week. Following that, then we go to Vinnie Grosso, who is contest chairman for the Society of American Magicians. He's the head judge as well as past national president, and he talks a little bit about how the contests were in the past a stepping stone to get to FISM, but the continental championships that now are the baseline on what you need to do in order to go to the world championships. Then we finally talked with a FISM winner himself, Mr. Boris Wild, who has not only competed, but won, and not only won, then later became a judge, and is now the head of the jury for FISM. And so we go right to the very source and the horse's mouth, so to speak, to get his advice and how it is that it works. And I think you will get a lot of education here in this episode. It's really interesting. And so, again, I want to thank the listener who had suggested that we try to demystify the contest for FISM. So please welcome my first guest, Mr. Noel Britton, president of the Magic Circle, here on The Magic Word. I have with me now the president of the Magic Circle, Mr. Noel Britton, and I thought it'd be great to kind of hear how that they conduct their competitions. And so welcome, Noel. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
I know that you guys have a competition, much of course like the IBM and the SAM and FISM, from the standpoint of close-up and comedy and stage. How many different categories of competition do you have?
We have the stage competition, the children's entertainer, close-up, and the Young Magician of the Year competition. So those are our four main competitions.
Are the judging credentials similar in each category? I mean, something which you're looking for?
I think each competition is different, and each competition's judges are different. And no matter how much you try to standardize it, you could have a different set of judges with the same acts who'd come to a different conclusion. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, my real thing with competitions is I think competitions are great. You know, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong. I think they're a brilliant, brilliant thing. But I think they're great for different reasons than most people would probably think of them. I mean, you know, the first thing is it's a deadline. You've got to be ready for it. And if nothing else, you know, magicians are great procrastinators. So having a competition to go, right, that is what I'm aiming for. I need to get this ready by a certain date is a great thing. I think they're a great showcase. I used to book the International Magic Convention in London, Macmillan's convention. And I'd go to FISM and other conventions and watch the competitions. And quite often I'd book acts that weren't the winners. You know, you'd almost book the acts before they'd even awarded the prizes, because you can get them a bit cheaper that way, I found. So, you know, you're looking at acts and going, oh, that's a great act. They'd fit in at the convention well, and you're going to fly them to London, you know, so it's good for them. But they're not necessarily the acts that win. So as a showcase, I think competitions are great. I think as a time stamp, if you've got a new thing that you're bringing out, or a new act, or a new idea, mm-hmm. Competition is a great way for a lot of magicians to see it all in one go, and for you to be able to very much go, okay, right, I invented that, and that's been witnessed by a large number of magicians all in one go.
Good point.
You meet people. I was in the Young Magician of the Year competition myself, run by the Magic Circle, when I was 16 or 17. Andrew O'Connor, who went on to create virtually Derren Brown through Objective TV, won it. I was second. Mark Oberon was third. So, you know, you get to meet great magicians early on in your life who you keep in touch with and have great friendships with. It's a challenge. You know, you can look at the competition as a challenge. Oh, this is going into a field that I'm not usually working within, you know, and I'm going to fool the judges, or I'm going to get the best reaction from magicians. Magicians are a very different audience to a commercial audience. So, you know, again, an act that works well in a magic competition is great for magicians. That's what they're being judged in front of and by, usually. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're a commercial act by any means whatsoever. You know, a lot of them are, but you've got that thing. And also it gives you a chance, if you haven't worked on a big stage before, a great chance to work in a proper theatre with proper lights, proper ability to be seen and experience that. And also, I mean, at the international convention, we used to have a close-up competition. And one year this guy went in for it. And we had at one stage, we had quite a sort of open policy for acts. You know, the right number of acts was trying to get the right number of spaces for the competition. We didn't have to have a sort of eliminating round or whatever. If it was, if you said you wanted to go in for it, it was the right number of people just to be accepted. And it was a close-up competition, and this guy came on and did his full stage act. And I sort of came off stage and I went, you know, well, you're not, what on earth are you doing? You know, it's a close-up competition. And we used to film the competition and give a tape of the competitor's act to them so they could see it afterwards. And he said, I wanted a professionally filmed version of my stage act.
That was his reason for wanting to compete.
It was his reason for going for the competition. Completely valid reason. Didn't want to win, you know. So I think in that sense, magic competition, you've really got to work out why it is that you're going in for it. Because it's completely subjective. You know, an athlete, the one that crosses the line first is the fastest. That's it. He's the winner. But at every magic convention I've ever been where there's a competition, there's always, you know, the person who's first might be a standout act that everyone goes, oh, yeah, it was definitely going to be him or her. But the second and third one, people be arguing about them, or they'll be arguing about first and second, or wasn't that the worst act? Oh, you thought they were, didn't you see that? I thought he was much worse. You know, right. It's always going to be a subjective thing. So there's one reason why you shouldn't go in for a competition, as far as I'm concerned.
What's that?
And that is to win it. If that is the reason that you're going in for a competition, I think you're making a big mistake, because you're never going to know the taste of the judges. You don't know who else is going in for the competition. I mean, I've had people who say, I'm going for this competition next year and I'm going to win it. I know I'm going to win it. You go, you don't know who you're going to be competing against. You know, someone can come from out the woodwork that you've never heard of before. Someone can go in for the competition who's been around for years, that's just been a, you know, slightly underground or whatever. You know, Marco Carvo, when he went in for the Grand Prix at FISM in Blackpool, was in the major competition there. You know, no one had seen him because he'd been working at the Lido in Paris for the last 14 years. And he came from nowhere with this incredible act. So you can't go in for a competition thinking I'm gonna win it, or it shouldn't be the reason you go in for it. You know, that's a very pleasant sideline if it comes about.
That's true, but it's not just that. You know, it is subjective. First of all, it's a performing art, and the art is in the eye of the beholder. And so if you're enjoying a different kind of music or art of whatever that it might be, sculptures or paintings or whatever, that I may like something different from what you like. And so the judges have a lot to do with that as well. And also that point in time about how good that act might be. Perhaps that your double lift wasn't as perfect as what it had been that you've been practicing or whatever it might be. I think you got a good point then. Very valid, Noel.
Well, and also, you know, you can stand, you're going to stand out by being different. So if there's a whole bunch of comedy acts and you're the one act that's doing some 12 manipulation act, you're going to stand out and you're going to be judged on different criteria to the comedy acts, because now all the comedy acts are going to be vying against each other for which one was funniest. And sometimes, you know, it can go the other way. It's not magic, but at the Edinburgh Festival each year, there's the Perrier Award. It used to be called the Perrier. It's changed its name now, but it was the Perrier Award. It was the big panel-judged prize that was given at the end of the festival. And it was made up of promoters and agents and public, the panel. And they go and see all the shows and they'd give it to the person who won. And one year, the decision was between two very well-known English comedians. I mean, they've both become very famous since then, but one was called Alan Davis and one was called Harry Hill, and they had very, very different styles, really different styles. One was very observational and the other one was like really zany. And half the panel loved one of them and hated the other one subjectively. The other half of the panel loved the second one and hated the first one. And in the end, they awarded it to an act, neither of those two acts, a third act, because it was the one that most of them liked okay
generally,
out of the three of them, you know. So the people who, that was a double act, the double act that won wasn't the act that anyone in that judging panel thought was the best. But it's you know, it's too weird a thing to go in for. And magicians love, you know, sleight of hand and finger flicking stuff. There's a very well-known act that I know who's won a lot of magic competitions, and I've seen him in front of a public audience, and they it doesn't mean very much to them because they're looking at it in a different way. They're just going, oh, he's doing a lot of the same thing. With a magical knowledge, you know that he's doing what looks like the same thing in a lot of different ways. But you know, so it's a great magic act for magicians, but as a commercial act it might not be that great.
Right. So what I hear you saying then basically is that you need to know why you are wanting to get into this and what you want to receive out of it. And that fame and fortune may not necessarily be an ultimate, shouldn't be an ultimate goal, first of all, I think, of entering any field. I think that that's just something that's a byproduct, that if you're not, if you're just working hard and you're good, you're going to ultimately find that. But if not, then you're still going to do fine. But that shouldn't necessarily be an ultimate goal when you go into that. It's like, I want to be the best actor in the world, or I'm going to be the best of, you know, carpet, whatever it happens to be, you know.
Yeah, there are too many criteria that will affect you in different places. You know, I mean, all the acts that finish with a huge confetti bomb or confetti cannon, you know, will get a big reaction in a competition because it's big and colourful and you'll spend a few quid on it, apart from anything else. But a booker with a commercial show, who's, you know, a variety show where you've got dancers coming on afterwards or an acrobat or whatever, is going to go, I can't have that amount of rubbish on my stage that someone might, you know, slip on or whatever.
That's a good point. For an example, whenever I had competed and lost in a competition, there was someone in the audience who was a booker who came to me and said, even though you didn't win, he said, I like you. I like your act and it fits for my audience. And he was able, I got actually ended up more successful than the fellow, I think, who had won the competition. He got a nice trophy. I got cash, you know, basically, and other shows.
And like you say, that's why you've got to work out why it is that you're doing. And as a deadline, and as a showcase, you know, if you think of it as a showcase as opposed to a competition, I think that's great. As a deadline, it's brilliant. You know, people do see it as a marketing thing of going, oh, I can say that I'm the winner of X. And in England, there's a lot of people who, you know, make jokes about acts on their website that say the award winning magic of Charlie Barnes. And you're going, well, you haven't told me what the award is or who you were competing against. You know, it could be your local society with only one other person in the competition, you know, but if you can put award winning and we all, I mean, you know, it's, we realize it's part of the sort of the game of the business that we're in. When I used to street perform many, many years ago, and I did there was a big street performing competition in Europe. And I came second. And the act that won was a double act, and I just worked on my own. So, I mean, after the competition, I was going, oh, voted the best solo performer at this. There wasn't a prize for the best solo performer. There was only one prize. It was, you know, but you start, you know, you can always twist these things. So to say, oh, it's going to boost my career, it's not. You know, the best thing that you can have is a good act, and that's what people should be aiming for. You know, rather than thinking, oh, what do I need to do? I mean, magic competitions, there was a time, and I mean, some people still do it, where you, in a close up show, you finished with a big prop. You know, mm-hmm. you'd be doing mm-hmm. coins all the way through, and then you produced a big coin. I mean, it goes back to cups and balls, you know, the big load at the end or whatever.
Right.
And that almost became a thing of what's your theme going to be, and what's the big thing that you're going to produce at the end of your act. Right. And you look at a lot of acts that have won close-up competitions, and you wouldn't be able to do them in a commercial environment to save your life. You know, you've got to sit down at the table and have 3 minutes of getting stuff ready and you know, bags next to you and so on. So it's a very odd concept to magic competition. And that's why I think you've got to think what it is. If you're going to win it, if that's the reason you're going to go in for it, I want to win this. I think you've got to look at the rules and make sure that you stretch them as far as possible and look at the marking criteria and anything that you can do to make it better. I mean, Bob Reed, there's a very famous story of Bob Reed going in for the magic competition at the Desert Seminar years ago. And Bob got there and he was in the competition. It was a big, big money prize. I think it was $10,000 or something like that. And he said to the person who was judging, he said, well, you know, what are the rules? Oh, it's time limit, 10 minutes, like that. And Bob went, oh, okay. He said, when do you start the clock? And the guy said, when you say, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You know, when you start talking, that's when Bob was like, oh, right, okay, thanks very much indeed. He goes, oh, he comes on, he does 4 minutes not saying anything. doing good magic, but visual, you know, and cod magic and mugging, you know, with his face and getting laughs because he was a great, you know, comedic performer, great clown if he had to work silently.
Right.
So he did 4 minutes of magic.
Mugging.
of mugging and silent bits and good, strong visual magic. And then his very first line of his act was start the clock. And then he did his act, you know. So he'd stretched the rules and he'd looked at the rules and gone, OK, how can I make the most of this? Mm-hmm. And the same with the judges. You know, if you're going in to win it and that is your only reason, I want to win this competition, find out all you can about the judges. If one of the judges hates card tricks, don't do card tricks, you know. But what are you doing if you go down that path? You're not doing what you really want to do. You know, you're doing whatever you can to win that competition. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, that's not going to make you happy. What's going to make you happy is going, this is the act that I think is good.
Right.
I'm going to put it out there. And hopefully on this day with this set of judges against these other competitors, that's going to be the thing that gets the award. It's not going to be the best act necessarily, but that's what's going to win the award. And you know, that'll be lovely if it happens. But if it doesn't, I've done what I want to do and I've shared it with this audience and hopefully they've appreciated it.
Great. Great. Well, Noel, thank you very much. That's some good advice, I think, certainly to determine why that you would want to enter a competition and why you wouldn't. So that's great. Thank you very much for your words of advice over there.
My pleasure.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was the president of the Magic Circle. That was Noel Britton. Scotty out.
Thank you, Noel. Now let's turn our attention to Mr. Vinny Grasso.
Right now I have with me the chairperson for the Society of American Magicians, Mr. Vinny Grasso, and he's the chairperson for the contest and also a past national president of the Society of American Magicians. Hey, welcome, Vinny. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you've been the contest chairperson for several years, and a question has been asked by one of the listeners, kind of is this a gateway, I mean, to getting into FISM ultimately? I mean, if you're going to be winning from the SAM, they have like one person that will kind of want to get into that then also, but also how you prepare for that and what should you expect? So let me ask first things first, how does one enter the competition? What do you need to do and what do you need to prepare for?
Okay, so that I mean, there is, when you say enter the competition, that's that could be mean a lot of things. So in addition to being the contest chair for the SAM, I'm the co-chair for the North American Championships of Magic, the FISM portion for the North America.
What does that mean? Can you split that out or identify?
Yeah, so there's FISM has its continental championships, which are North America, Europe, Asia, Oceania. All the different continental championships are held the year before FISM, and it was just announced that they're, you know, pushing FISM back. So is the right. The continental champ, the North American championships for magic. So I would imagine most of your listeners are reside in North America.
So, they don't.
No. Okay. Well, you have to find when your continental championship is being held and where. Mm-hmm. And that is you apply for that contest.
Do you have to be a citizen of that continent? Or in other words, can a person from Australia enter the North American contest or things like that?
No, it's wherever you are a resident. If you are a member of a FISM organization, because FISM is made up of organizations, not individuals. So if you are a member of a FISM organization.
Such as SAM.
SAM, IBM, AMA, Academy of Magical Arts,
right.
CAM, and then in Quebec, those are the North American societies. So if you're a member of a FISM society, you would apply for the contest for whichever continent you reside.
Okay.
So if I live in Italy, I'm competing, even if I'm American, but I'm living in Italy for whatever, and I might be wrong on that, but as my understanding of
okay.
it, It's been a little, it's wherever you are and have been a resident is where you would apply for that contest, that basically the qualification round for FISM. So I'm going to talk about the North American Championships because that's what I'm involved sure. with and know most about. So Quebec City is hosting the North American Championships of Magic. That was supposed to have happened already in May, but because of COVID, it's been pushed to sometime next year. And then during at that contest is when you would qualify or not qualify for FISM. That is your way to get to FISM if you reside in Canada or the United States. I believe Mexico, any folks from Mexico, I believe they are in the Latin America contest of magic, qualification, championships of magic for FISM. So that is completely different than the Society of American Magicians contest. We never say competition. I was talking to you before about how the SAM contest is a whole nother animal than these FISM contests. The FISM contests are they're trying to make them as uniform as possible as far as rules and
the judging sheets and all that.
Judging sheets, how the judging panel, the deliberations, all of that stuff, they try to kind of keep uniform across, so it leads to how it is actually done at FISM.
So that way there are not going to be surprises because you have competed according to the FISM guidelines, if you will, in those intercontinental championships to get to the world championships that would have right. the similar kind of judging, just like you would, I guess, the Olympics.
Yes, and I mean that's the objective there. But to talk, if you want to talk about, if that's what you want the discussion to be about, that I'm happy to talk regarding that. If you want to talk about the SAM contest of magic, that is a whole different thing. It's a completely different thing. And the same, the IBM contest is also similar to the SAM contest in that it is just for our organization. Mm-hmm. It is not. If you win the IBM contest or you win the SAM contest, you are not going to FISM per se. You have to be in the North American Championships or another continental championship in order to get into the FISM contest.
So winning the IBM or SAM just qualifies you to get to the intercontinental championships, where you would then qualify to get into FISM or not?
Not necessarily, but let's put it this way. If you in the past there was a thing, if you had won an IBM, SAM, or CAM contest, you automatically qualified for the North American Championships of Magic.
CAM, by the way, Canadian Association of Magicians.
Winning an SAM or an IBM contest is not it's not a automatic pass to anymore to the North American Championships of Magic. However, anyone that has won either of those contests, I cannot, even though it's not written down, I just can't see them not getting accepted into the North American Championships of Magic. I think to win one of those contests puts you at a level that it very well deserving of being in that contest.
But theoretically, they could have someone who wins, let's say, the gold medal for the IBM. I mean, the ultimate prize is not given all the time, but they may end up going with the first or even second person who won first or second to go to the Intercontinental Championships. Is that correct? Theoretically.
No, they're completely independent, Scott. One is not a qualifier to the other.
So is the person selected then?
So the IBM has their own way of doing it. With the SAM, you have to apply for the contest and get accepted to be in the contest at our convention.
At the SAM convention.
At the SAM convention. Winning or doing horribly at that contest has no impact on whether or not you can get into the continental championships, like the North American championships.
Completely separate.
Right. And it's the same process of submitting a video, and there's a panel that looks at it, and then they accept or do not accept acts to be in the continental championship.
So if you have
continental championship is where you have to score a certain level. You have to be of a certain level that's FISM quality level.
Right.
And then if of the people that attain that level score, they take the top, I don't know if it's 7 or 9, depending on stage or close up, and give them bids to FISM. So if I could be wrong with the numbers, but let's just say that there are 9 stage acts that can go and 7 close up acts.
Okay. Just saying. Yeah.
Argument's sake. If there are only 5 acts that on stage that achieved a score for FISM level, of a FISM level, I believe it's 70 or above, then only those 5 acts are going to get invitations to perform at FISM. So there are 4 empty slots, if you will, that aren't filled because the acts are not good enough. Now, let's say that there are 15 acts that score 70 or above. Then it's taking the top 7 of those acts.
The higher, that could be 80 or above or whatever that happens to be. I understand. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, what if somebody, for an example, does win an IBM and SAM? As you say, I can't see why they wouldn't necessarily be elevated to go to the Intercontinental Championships. But once, let's say that they do, does that mean you just qualify? Then you have to still compete on the Intercontinental stage, or do they just look at your tape and say, well, that video looks okay, you physically have to go and compete?
Yeah, like, so I don't know. There's all sorts of confusion with this. So let me just try and say it.
Yeah, demystify, please. That's the whole point of this.
The IBM, SAM, or any other convention magic contest is not relevant at all with regard to a bid at FISM. The only way to get an invitation to perform at FISM is if you perform, if you apply, get accepted, perform, and then qualify in the Continental Championship of Magic for whichever continent you reside in.
That's clear. Boy.
Okay.
In one sentence, boy, I think you just kind of nailed the whole podcast just right down to that. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. So anybody could. Well, that's interesting.
So there still is, I think, a really great purpose and value to the SAM contest or the IBM contest, because it is a contest. So there is that element of, I have a deadline. I have to have my act ready. I have to, you know, deal with multiple people coming on and off stage and in my slot, and I don't have control of it. The camaraderie of working with other folks that are contestants and all that, and it's to me a great learning experience for contests in general. And it's
so what you're suggesting, I hear, is that you should compete as often as you can in as many different contests, I guess, in order to get to that level, as opposed to just saying, hey, I think I want to try to get, even if you are at a particular professional level, has a great act, original act, or whatever it is, and to apply to Intercontinental Championships, and that shouldn't be the first place that you would compete, is what you're suggesting.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't. I wouldn't suggest the SAM or IBM contest to be your first place for a contest. I mean, there are lots of regional conventions that have contests that I would strongly suggest being a part of to kind of understand it. Because I mean, I struggle with chairing the SAM contest because in the past the contest had their purpose was much more obvious than necessarily what it is now. Because I remember talking with the late great Johnny Thompson about a routine, some of the routines that I had done for Penn and Teller Fool Us.
Right.
And I was almost I was almost apologizing for myself as a magician with having fooled them twice. And I was like, yeah, but you know, the other people that fooled them twice, they're all FISM champions. You know, they all were at the time. There were only four of us at the time when I did that. You know, Paul Gertner, Shin Lim, and Sean Farquhar, all FISM champions. And then myself, who if I wasn't a
Vinny who?
From the contest, I wouldn't be allowed in the doors, you know. And Johnny said to me, and he's in more colorful language than I'm gonna say, but he's like, screw that. You entertained the folks. You've done very entertaining acts, and that's what's important. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the struggle that we have with the SAM contest is. An act that is designed to do well in a contest is not necessarily the most commercial act around. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that acts that do well in contests are not commercial and they can't make a living or whatever, because the people that I mentioned have made a wonderful living doing magic. And I'm not taking, you know, anything away from any of that, but it's just a different animal. I mean, and I think Sean would, I don't know. I'm not going to put words in Sean's mouth, but I mean, his FISM contest act is not how he's made his living. I mean, that has been a part of a bigger show that he's been able to do.
Right.
And same with Paul Gertner. I mean, he's able to do a full show. Mm-hmm. And that's, so there are a lot of incredibly talented people out there that are great professionals, but don't necessarily have a FISM caliber or FISM style act. And what I'm trying to do with the SAM contest is how do we recognize these types of acts that and give them kind of a platform while still preserving the history of the contest, because there are set rules or whatever. I don't want to, you know, one person that earned a gold medal like George Satirial with his classic, you know, Dove act. If we had another act win a gold medal with something just not even on par or comparable, it's different. So we've added a lot of different elements of, so you may not win the high score award, but you might win an invitation, contract to perform at this convention or a contract to perform at this event and stuff like that. So how can you get value out of it? Even if your act is not necessarily.
So are you suggesting that if people are entering a contest to win it, particularly at the IBM or SAM level or regional level or even local or whatever, that they should be trying to work on an act that they think will fool a magician as, that may also be commercial, but it's really because your judges are magicians. They're not, for the most part, lay people. So are you suggesting that as a prepare
certainly,
one?
The FISM judges are 100% magic, you know,
right.
Magician related and have a depth of knowledge.
Well, for the Grand Prix, at the very end, I mean, they do have some people, it seems like when I've been there, that they have some local celebrities, I thought, who kind of sit in as judges who are like have a television show in Japan or something. Isn't that true?
I can't speak yes or no to that.
Okay.
I haven't been in the deliberation rooms for the Grand Prix.
I know they do that, like for the Grand Prix with the IBM.
For the SAM, when I put together a panel of judges, I make sure that I have someone that is very well versed in stage magic, someone that's very well versed in close up magic. And then someone that is not versed at all, a complete layperson kind of thing, but fan of entertainment. Because in the discussion room, they will be able to learn. People, you know, the expert on stage will be able to share, yeah, this was original, or no, this thing was done by so and so, and et cetera, et cetera. They can kind of give an education for that particular act,
right.
And layperson can also give, hey. No, I thought that was amazing. I didn't see any of that, you know, so, and there are different categories that you're being judged on. So, you know, magical nature is one of them, but how entertaining it was is another. So people can score in different categories. But having said all that, the magic portion of your score is the most significant, speaking for the SAM contest. So unless, you know, that is why, I mean, there we have a People's Choice Award, and then we have the Chairperson's High Score Award, where the Chairperson's High Score Award, it's going to go to someone that's doing a fair amount of magic that is technically challenging, where a People's Choice Award could go to someone that, you know, maybe just did one trick, did it really well, or and it was more comedy than anything else, but just absolutely took over the audience and had them vote for him.
So. Right, right. All right. Well, I think that really kind of clears up a lot of things. Then I'm both continental.
I feel like I've just made everything confusing.
Well, now I think that just to summarize again, I guess that sounds like that to enter contests that you really need to think about who are the judges, and that is that they are going to be magicians. So you should have something that, of course, is going to be mysterious all the time because we are magicians. So you should have a mysterious act, but you should have something that's geared more towards the magician judges so that you can fool them with magic. And then also that if you are a winner of the IBM or SAM, that does not necessarily mean that you're going to get that golden ticket to FISM by any means, because even if you do, that may qualify you to whenever that you make your application to the Continental Championships.
Yes.
And then once that you enter that, and then you compete, that's just like with the rest of FISM in the World Championships and all the other Continental World Championships, that you have to have a minimum standard or minimum number of points in order to then be able to go on to FISM. And there again, that you have a minimum number, because I know that they have several categories and subcategories within each of those. And sometimes and oftentimes there is not a first or second prize that has been awarded. I know at FISM, I believe a while back, you know, when Tommy Ten and Emily had won for mentalism, I believe that was the first time in I don't know how many years that a first prize had been given. I think prior to that, it's only like second or third. The point being is that there's no guarantee, even if you get to that. It's not like other competitions that you're the best of who happened to be here today, you know, kind of a thing. You have different level.
The way FISM does it, and it's similar, like I said, to qualify for FISM, you have to score, I believe it's 70 or better, and then place within the top whatever number we're giving bids out, whether it's 7 or 9, depending on the stage or close-up. But the way FISM does their overall contest is you have to, in order to qualify for a first place award, you have to score, I believe, 90 or better, 80 or better for second place, or 70. I don't know the exact numbers.
But there's
a certain score level that you have to achieve in order to be considered for first place, second place, or third place. And then they rank you based on how you are relative to other people. So if two people scored high enough for a first place vote, the person that scored the highest gets first place. The person that scored next gets second place.
Sure, that makes sense.
If the person that scored the highest out of everybody that was a contestant but only had a score high enough for a second place, that's where you see just a second and third and no first place award.
I'll ask one more question, then I'll let you go. So we have other people we need to talk to get on the podcast here then as well, and that is those judging sheets and the points. Are those sheets available on the SAM website or through FISM? Is there somewhere that you can request that prior to entering a contest so that way you're going to know what the judges are going to be judging on for you?
Sure. People have requested them from me, and I send them out, especially for the SAM contest, which actually – just a little bit of history. The SAM contest, as it is kind of today, it was the inception of it was from Father Cyprian Murray, who created the judging thing, and then Paul Critelli took it to a whole new level. But FISM's scoring sheets were modeled after Father Cyprian's scoring sheets. So the scoring sheets that we still use today for the SAM, you can see their influence on the FISM scoring sheets. And if anyone wants the scoring sheets from the SAM, they can just shoot me an email. My email is Vinny, V-I-N-N-Y, at magicsam.com.
Okay. What about for the Intercontinental Championships?
That would I'm not sure what our policy. I have to. So I'm a co-chair with Joan Caesar on that. And when I say I'm a co-chair, I need to qualify that. Joan handles the judging aspects of the contest, and I kind of handle the logistics and production side of it. So I'm dealing with the contestants from backstage. You know, it's kind of like sure. Anything behind the proscenium, I'm dealing with. Anything in front of the proscenium, Joan is dealing with. So I would have to. She would actually be a great person to chat with on this podcast if you can.
I had asked her, and she said that I should talk with you.
Oh.
she deferred to you. She
She's
said,
a great delegator, too,
yeah.
by the way.
Yes, she is.
So
the answer to that is that you don't have that readily available, but
I can tell you, if you get the SAM scoring sheet, it isn't going to be much different. I mean, it might be a little bit different, but not enough where you'd be changing your act in order to do something.
It's the same thing for the FISM scoring sheet then as well. That is not available like on their website, for an example, is it?
I don't believe it is.
Okay.
And when I say I give out the scoring sheet, I don't give out the sheet that is for the scoring. I give out kind of the description of what the judges are scoring you based on.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Okay. So people can write you as far as the SAM qualifications there sure. then as well. So,
yeah. And what I'll do is I will talk with Joan, and if she's okay with it and all that, if anybody that asks me for an SAM sheet, I will also put in a FISM sheet if it is allowed to.
Okay. Well, by the time that this is prepared and produced and put all together, that I will hear back from you, so I will add a little tag at the end of this saying whether yes or no it's available. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, very good. Vinny, thank you very much. I appreciate your input on this. It's very valuable.
No problem, Scott. Thank
good.
You.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Vinny Grosso speaking on behalf of the Society of American Magicians and for the Continental World Championships. This is Scotty out. That was great. Thanks, Vinny. And now, finally, let's hear from Mr. Boris Wilde in Paris, France. Well, now I have with me a good friend from Paris, France, who is someone who has really done it all, having to do with FISM. And FISM is Fédération Internationale Société de Magie. I butchered that horribly, but it's the World Championships of Magic, and he is a gentleman who has not only performed, he's competed, he's won, and then later served on a jury, and then now is the head of the jury for FISM. Please welcome my friend Boris Wilde. Hey there, Boris.
Hey, hello Scott, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us today. I want to see if you can help demystify really what it is to win FISM and to actually to be judged on FISM. And I guess first question is, why did you decide to compete for FISM? At what point did you think, you know, I think I'll enter these contests to kind of lead up to this? Or what was your pathway?
What I did is I created my my Act de Caisse Act, which became my FISM Act after I created for the French national competition, so the French Championship of Magic, because I had this idea for like a few years, and I was like, okay, well, it's a different act, so I guess it's something that, you know, could be interesting to show to the guys, and we'll see how it goes. And then it went great because I won first place, and I got the Grand Prix, which never happened to any called magician before me. So it was in 96. And at that time,
that was your first competition, like, and you won the Grand Prix.
Yeah, well, I did competitions before, but for several years, I stopped because I wanted to experience the contest when I was a little younger, because mm-hmm. people say, yeah, if you want to have like a name or people want to know you a little bit more, competition is great because it's a nice way just to showcase your vision of magic and your act, which I did. And worked really well. And then I started to, you know, do like magic at that time. I was still a student, so half time, I would say. And then one day I was like, well, maybe I should do one more just to see. And I created that act. Yeah, got the Grand Prix. And people were like, well, you know what? Now, after that, you need to do one step further. I was like, what? And lucky me, I mean, FISM is every 3 years. And so the year just after, so it was like, what, 10, 11 months, not even, I mean, yeah, 10 months later, it was FISM. So they were like, well, why don't you compete at FISM? I'm like, hey, come on, it's the World Championship of Magic. Are you kidding me? And they were like, yeah, well, you got Grand Prix in France. Why not? So, and that's what I said, well, I'm not expecting anything, but that's going to be an experience. And that's something I really wanted to do. I was like, okay, I want to experience what FISM is as a contestant. And I was not expecting anything, to be very honest. And that was it. And my main thing was in mind, okay, I'm pretty sure so far I knew what stage fright was, but I'm quite sure I have never really experienced stage fright. And if I do FISM, I will know what stage fright is. And after that, I can go anywhere and I will be fine because I will not, you know, I will know what it was to be at FISM.
Did you have stage fright?
Oh my God, yes. I mean, that's the only time in my life that I felt my knees bending the other way. Because knees only bend one way. And I have a video of my performance in the competition. And you can see me. I just walk behind the table and you can see my body moving a little bit, like, yeah, like tilting. And like, that's the moment my knees bend the other way.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I was so afraid and scared and everything. But yeah, I mean, it was a wonderful experience, obviously.
Well, leading up to that, that was before that they had the Continental Championships. In other words, that you didn't have to how did you qualify? You just didn't send in a video to FISM, did you? Or how that work? Oh.
Well, it was a little different at that time because 94. Indeed, right now they have the Continental. Yes, it was in 97 when I, 97 in Dresden when I won in cars. And then, but it's that time. It was a little different at that time. If you wanted to compete at FISM, you needed to have that paper signed by the president of one of the member, the FISM member societies at that time. So in my case here, we got the FFAP, La Fédération Française des Artistes Prestidigitateurs. So if the president was signing for you because you could prove that your act was FISM level, and because of my Grand Prix, obviously, I got the signature and that was it. But it was a very different time because sometimes I would say that in some societies, if you knew the president a little better than some other people and you wanted to compete at FISM, you could get the signature and that would just make you go to FISM. And obviously at that time we had some, you know, acts at FISM that the level was not FISM level.
That's true. And as I recall back then also, Boris, it seems that if you as a designated person, let's say with the IBM or SAM or some more recognized organization, had recommended someone and they were not FISM quality, that you would have to be left off then for making a recommendation for the following FISM?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's happened after a while because, yes, we had some competition that were at FISM and we were like, what the hell? What are they doing here? They do not have the FISM level. So now they turn back to the person who signed, like the president of the society, and be like, okay, yes, you should not have signed for that guy. I mean, what the hell? Obviously, he's not FISM level. So, and after a while, they decided that the guy could not sign for any contestants for the next 3 years, or which was like blaming the guy a little bit just to show him that you can't send anybody to FISM. It has to be to a certain level.
Well, I've spoken with Vinny Grosso, who had given me a little bit of an understanding about how that you have to win at a certain level and then actually, or if you don't win, at least to compete at the Continental Championships before that. But so once you get into FISM, then my question really, and what I wanted to direct toward you then more, Boris, it had to do with the jury as to what are what's the criteria basically that you're looking to when you're judging people, the acts, I should say. And I know that there are several acts. There's not just close up, stand up and stage, but there's also mentalism, and there are subcategories within each of those then as well.
Exactly.
I assume that they all have their own juries.
Well, so a couple of things about that. So the good thing is that Eric Esvin, who is the past president of FISM and now honorary president of FISM, decided to have this Continental Championship, which is great because now, unlike before, you have to compete like first to your national championship, like what I did in France. And then if you get awarded, then you can get your ticket, I would say, to FISM Europe. Was not the case for me, but like all the people now who just won at the French Championship can go to FISM Europe. There is a limited number of people, so that's the thing. And so depending on the country, so let's say France may have like, I don't know, 4 seats, and maybe Germany will have 5, and Italy will have 3. And so it's just like a, you know, certain number of people that they can send to FISM Europe. And then if you win at FISM Europe again, then you're qualified to go to, you get the golden ticket for the big FISM. And now when you get that again, there is like a certain number of people, because obviously there are bigger countries, bigger societies. So depending on that, there are, you know, obviously there would be like more people coming from a bigger country than, you know, in a smaller country, or because the society is just bigger. And then you go to FISM. Then at FISM, you have to choose your category, because some competitions below the FISM Continental Championship, as you say, have may stage and close up, and that's it.
But so you can choose your category, but yeah. Can you actually be competing? And then the judges say, you know, I think that person really belongs in coins or whatever. Yeah. And they will move
exactly.
You.
Yeah, before the Continental Championship, there are competitions where there's no distinctions between, you know, like Micro Magic or Card Magic or Parlor. There's a 3 categories in close-up. And on stage, you got Illusions, mental Magic, Comedy Magic, General Magic, Manipulations. So there are like 5 on stage and 3 in close-up. So when you go to FISM Continental Championship, you have to decide right now. And then, of course, when you go to the big FISM, you keep that same category. And sometimes the jury are like, yeah, this guy was in general magic, but it's more manipulation, or he's in manipulation, but there's not enough manipulation, so we put it in general magic. And sometimes some contestants play on that, because they don't want to be like in manipulation, because they know they're going to have to fight against those amazing, crazy Korean magicians.
That's right, yeah. Those Asians are amazing.
So they move to general magic. But that's okay. I mean, the jury can just move you to the category.
So whenever that you do judge, that there is a judging sheet, and you have to have a minimum of a certain number of points before you even will hit...
Exactly. Yeah, there are 2 things. There are, of course, the scores. So it's up to 100 points. And below 50 is below FISM level, obviously. So, and then you have to reach a certain number of points for third place, you have to be 60 points on 100. For second place, it has to be 70 points. And for first place, it has to be 80 points. And among all the people over 80 points, then you can decide who is going to be the Grand Prix, so the world champion, both in close-up and stage, because obviously there are 2 different jury panels, one for stage, one for close-up, and 2 champions, one which is the world championship of close-up magic, one is the world champion of stage magic.
Well, when Johnny Ace Palmer had won the Grand Prix, for an example, who were the jurors or the panel? I mean, did they have a panel of jurors who were close up, or were they stage?
It was different that time. It started in 2003, if my memory is okay. So Johnny Ace Palmer won in 1988 in Den Haag.
Right.
And at that time, there was one jury panel for everything. But I think it's so much better that they decided early 2000s to have 2 different panels, because they can be specialists in close-up but not in stage. Like here, I was head of the jury in close-up, but if they would have asked me to do that for stage, I would have refused. I would have said, you got other people than me who are more qualified, in my opinion, just to be head of the jury for stage. Close-up, I'm flattered that you asked me, and I did it. But I think it's so much better now to have 2 different panels.
Well,
now,
can a person who does close-up actually win the Grand Prix again then, or not?
Oh yeah, because there is one Grand Prix in close up and one Grand Prix in stage now.
Oh, that's so right.
That's 2 things. Yeah. So yeah. In the past, it has always been the Grand Prix
was one Grand Prix for
all categories, whether stage or close up. When Johnny Ace Palmer won, he was the very first close up guy to win the Grand Prix. But then I think it's better now that you have a Grand Prix in close up, you have a Grand Prix on stage. It's 2 different things, I would say.
Now,
yeah.
Do you weight the judging more towards one or the other? In other words, that audience participation, or for how difficulty level, or the staging, the costuming, or, you know?
Yeah, we have criteria. So as I said, 100 points. In the past, it used to be like, oh, technique is 30 and originality is 30 and this is 20. It's over now. We don't do that anymore. It has changed in the past few years. Huh. Now we have 100 points and we can decide each jury, if a jury is more like, yeah, I mean, for me, technique is more important and I want to judge the technique with like 40 on the 100, they can do that. Or some others like me would be like, I'm more into originality and creativity, so I would probably use more points for creativity. And of course, you keep that same, I would say, frame of mind in, you know, during the entire process for everybody. Right. But you got a magic atmosphere, which is one of the criteria. So it's like the feeling of wonder, you know, is the act is magic by nature. You got showmanship presentation. So it's the presence, the appearance, stagecraft, et cetera, et cetera. The entertainment value is another one, which is how you enjoy the act and is it how the audience reacts to the act. Then you got the artistic impression and the routining. How is it structured? You know, is the opening strong and how is it built? Of course, you get technical skill, which is the handling. So it's basically more sleight of hand manipulation. And you got originality, of course, it's the end, which is very important, I think, which is, does it include any novel ideas? You know, is it how unusual it is, how different it is? So if you take a mix of all these six criteria, of course, and if you got someone very high, like very original and very skillful with a great character, perfectly built act, et cetera, then of course the score would go.
So it sounds like that there really can be any number from 0 to 100 that you can ultimately give to any one of those things. In other words, there's not like, you know, 1 through 10 that you give to creativity. You could give 80 to creativity if somebody is extremely creative. Is that correct? So it's really kind of subjective to the jurist.
The thing is that it used to be the score sheet used to have like criteria with like fixed numbers.
Yeah.
Now they have decided that you have 100 points and you can give them the way you want. Obviously, being a FISM judge, you can't say, hey, I'm going to give 90 points to originality and then 2 points for technique and 2 to this and that. No, obviously, we have to keep it balanced. And that's why we have been chosen as you know, FISM judges, because they know that we will keep that number, those numbers balanced. But obviously, we're all different. And some people will be more technical. Some people will be more about originality. But you know, it's going to be like very like, it's going to be like, I don't know, 25, 20, 20, whatever. But it doesn't change much in the end, because we just judge everyone with the same, you know, criteria in mind. Yeah.
Now, there are the judges use the same criteria, basically, regardless of whether it's going to be for Australia or for Latin America, you know, whatever continental championships, it wouldn't necessarily be you being a judge or others that, so there'll be different juries at these different continental championships. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. There is a list of official FISM judges, and those judges can be asked to go to FISM Europe, FISM America, FISM South America, and FISM Asia, and just go there just to judge those continental championship, and of course another panel will be decided for the FISM every 3 years for stage and close up each time there. But you have to be FISM official FISM judge, obviously, for the big FISM, I would say, like just like the other ones, but yeah, especially that one.
Now, when you keep referring back to the big FISM, you're talking about the one that's every 3 years.
Like when I say the big FISM, it's like the world championship of, it's the FISM world championship of magic, as we say. So it's like once people have been qualified to all FISM continental championship, then they can get this golden ticket to what we call FISM, which is the world championship of magic, where in that case, you got people from all over the world and the winners from FISM Europe, from FISM America, from FISM Asia, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Oceania, Africa. Yeah.
All right. One last question that has to do with FISM, but not necessarily with judging, not at all with judging. That has to do, I know that right now that FISM has been postponed until 2022. Typically, again, it's every 3 years, so it's not going to be in Quebec next year on the 2021. However, that will it go back to every 3 years? Rather, will it go back like 2 years later? So in other words, in 2022, will they do it then again in 2024, or will it be 2025? In other words, they're going to, once that they've skipped this year, are they going to just forget about 21 and just kind of do every 3 years again, or are they going to get back on track?
I honestly, it's a little too soon to know.
Okay.
The decision has been, you know, taken like a few days ago. The main reason it's been postponed is because, of course, the current situation in the world, but it's also because lots of FISM Continental Championship could not be held, like FISM Europe, which was supposed to be in Spain in just now in 10 days, cannot be, of course, you know, done there. And there were some other ones too. So without the possibility of those FISM Continental Championship to be held and for people to just, you know, work on the act and be qualified, it would have been like too tight to do it like early next year, just a few months before FISM. So FISM is going to be in 2022. Honestly, I would think that they would go to every 3 years as before, because it's a very big event that requires lots of preparation. And also because this FISM Continental Championship need to be again held. So if they, you know, they're held in early 2021, or a little later in 2021, so mm-hmm. to be prepared for 2022, I guess you have to wait another 3 years just to, you know, properly do those FISM Continental Championships again to get new winners for the big FISM, like the World Championship.
My last question, having to do with the jury again, is that the makeup of the jury, all magicians, or are there any lay people involved? In other words, that I'm wondering, when someone prepares an act, should they be preparing an act for a group of magicians that they're wanting to, a magician fooling a magician, as opposed to a commercialist, what would be considered a commercial act that the public may enjoy, but magicians look with a different critical eye? How would they prepare for their show? Should they prepare to fool a magician or to fool the public?
Well, it's so far, this is how it's been done. The judges at FISM are magicians. And so it's not only about fooling the magicians. Of course, if you get fooled, then it's great. I mean, you're at FISM, you're a judge, and you see a contestant and you get fooled. I mean, that's a great feeling, obviously. But we also need to keep in mind that this guy later will be a FISM winner. And so, or it can be like the world champion of magic. So he's going to be the ambassador of magic. So we also need to keep in mind how people would perceive him as the ambassador of magic or as a winner at the world championship of magic. So it's important also that this act is not, I would say it's not, doesn't need to be a commercial act, or it doesn't need to be an act that is a little too, you know, made for magicians, but it needs also to be an act that represents what magic is nowadays. Mm-hmm. So it's also something that we need to keep in mind, obviously. In the past, I know that Monique Nakachon, she was the general manager of Table Agency, and she was the one booking all the acts for the show Le Plus Grand Cabaret du Monde on TV. That, you know, been there for like 20 years on TV. And she was there too. And she was part of the jury, not as a full jury member, as I would say, but as a consultant mm-hmm. in that, for having that vision of, yes, that act can be booked. That act can be a good, act as an ambassador of magic. And I think it was a good decision too. And having a mix of people who are more older.
A different perspective. Like, yeah.
Yes, like knowing more about history, about sources and credits and stuff. Some more people, more technique. Some more like more artistic, more people that are managers that can, you know they can put those kinds of acts in the show and make it a successful show. So again, it's about balance. And FISM has done, you know, I think a good job having people from all over the world with different sensibilities and male, female, older, mm-hmm. younger, just to have results that, you know, that is as, you know, as precise and as good as possible to
sure.
Give the awards to the best at the World Championship of Magic.
Good. Yes. Well, Boris, thank you very much. That really does help a lot, not only for my understanding, but hopefully for those who are listening to the podcast here, to have a better idea of how this, you go about getting to FISM and also about what the judges are going to be looking for. And it's interesting from an historical standpoint of some of the information you've given us there as well, but most importantly of what it takes in right now to win. So
yeah.
That's great.
And if I had one last thing to say is that if you go step by step, that's all I always say. The FISM Continental Championship are great now because you can enter like a local or like a smaller competition. Then maybe go like to IBM SIM or like a national one. Then go to like the FISM Continental Championship, obviously, to get your golden ticket. And Obviously, because your goal is to, you know, either experience the FISM or maybe win at FISM, one thing to keep in mind, be different, because you will be against so many people from all over the world. And you can be sure that if you go there with a matrix or with something, somebody else obviously will do the same thing as you. But if you're unique enough and you do something different enough, then you get your chance to win and not only experience it as a wonderful, you know, thing to be at the FISM, but also maybe go back home with the trophy.
That'd be excellent. Well, thank you again very much, Boris. I appreciate your comments. So from Paris, France, and someone who leads the jury for FISM, that was Boris Wild. Thank you again very much. This is Scotty Allen. Thank you very much, Boris. I appreciate you being my guest as well. I appreciate Mr. Noel Britton and Vinny Grasso for being on the podcast episode here this week also, and for your thoughts, all of you, on helping to demystify the contest in getting into FISM. I hope that this encourages you to enter the contest and go all the way and bring back the gold from the World Championships of Magic. And speaking of contests, now, as promised on the back end of this episode, I told you we would announce the two winners from the contest from episode 571 with Jamie Salinas, in which we will tell you the names of those two people whose names were drawn at random from around the world who entered the contest for a copy of Perfect Personality Readings by Paul Draper and Jamie Salinas. And the two winners are Jay Frazier and George Buff. Congratulations to those two winners, and also thank all of you for entering the contest. And we do have contests from time to time, so if you didn't win in that contest, there are others that you might be able to be a winner in those. In fact, we have another contest which is running simultaneous, and so we have another week on the contest if you would like to be entered into the drawing to win a copy of the hardback book of Master of Deception by John Ivan Palmer, who talks about his father, Jack Pyle, then be sure to go to this week's episode and the blog in number 573 for themagicwordpodcast.com. And there you can fill out the form. And if you are living domestically in the United States, shipping is free. If you are outside of the U.S., and your name happens to be randomly drawn, then you'll be contacted with a quote on how much it will cost for foreign postage. And if you agree to pay for that, then you will win, and you can reimburse us for that postage. If you decide not to reimburse for that shipping charge, then we will draw yet another name. Anyhow, you get the general idea. All's pointed out there on the podcast episode. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly pod letter, where that you can find out who is in each week's episode, who is coming up next week, and also a suggestion from the archives, including other information which might be of interest to you from week to week, including updates on contests. And you can be among the first to enter a contest by subscribing to our pod letter. Again, if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you will find a form where you can complete with your name and email address, and then you will be subscribed to the weekly pod letter. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up here for this week. It's been a very interesting and educational episode. I hope that you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And so until next week, stay well, get booked, and work on your act. Who knows? You could be the next FISM winner. This is Scotty out.